Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Carpcast. How are we going, Mark?
Yeah, not bad. It's nice to be back.
75, three quarters of a century. Are you giving us good odds of making 100 by the end of the year?
Well, I think as long as we take all our stimulants and supplements and all the PEDs, I think we should make it.
Yeah, we apologise for the lack of frequency in the last few months of the Carpcast. I don't really know why, really. Our schedules haven't been aligning. I felt reluctant to do one on my own if you've not been around. And you tend to have free time at night, and my free time tends to be in the daytime. So, you know, I've felt bad like doing one without you, so I haven't done that precisely, but we had a bit of a chat off air earlier, and we've suggested that to keep our listeners happy, to keep it as the premier carp fishing podcast, and I think the listeners would rather have one or the other of us rather than nothing, I would think. So feel free, if you're feeling inspired one evening, Mark, then get yourself recorded, or if you're on the bank, or you know, you've got one of your guests or your mates, or you want to do one with, I know Frank Warwick offered his services this week, feel free, go for it, record it, send it me, and I'll edit it up, and I'll do the same. Then obviously people might miss me and you together instead of being bored of us.
yeah, it'd be interesting. And I know you've done, I did the first solo one back with Ed Bettridge years ago.
Yeah, we both did one each, and there's a couple of podcasts out there that you know, they have like the presenter and then they just have the guest. Yeah, and they talk all the way through the podcast about, they go through all the questions and the history of the guest, as well as talking about general current affairs stuff. So there's no reason why we can't do that, is there? I don't think.
No, it'll certainly solve the problem with well, like you say, our schedules just not working with our different lives. That's the only way of putting it, and you know, I'm doing more things at the minute, and it's not going to be going any easier.
No, and you tend to have 2 days off a week, and you don't mind doing some fishing every now and again. So when you get those
tried,
yeah. How has the fishing been going?
Next question.
Tell me what's been going on.
Oh, mate, my fishing is a comedy of errors this year. It's not just the fishing; just everything around it is conspiring against me actually going and doing anything. You know, and this week actually, when I did one night. And yeah, just for all the piss takers out there, I had a double take and landed two bream. I'm sure you love that one.
Double bream.
And
take.
Then, yeah. And then, you know, when you're just winding one and you think, oh, this is a bream. And then your middle rod just like beep, 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 up and then just drops back. And you just think, oh, piss off, fall off. But no, it didn't. And then I was already sniffling a bit with a hay fever, and then it just kicked off. Big time, and it was the first time I can remember I've actually come home from a session early when I was 100% on carp. I actually packed all the gear in the back of the van, drove to the spa for some munchies, which is about a mile up the road, and you know, just driving with the windows down, you know, the hay fever cleared a bit, I felt better, and I'd already had my too much nasal spray, to be honest. It was starting to hurt the back of my throat, and just driving it cleared it up a bit. So I thought, right, I went back down to the lake. I was sat in another swim, just watching the water. I seen a couple of fish bosh out at, you know, silly range, but you know, I know I could get close to them, close-ish. And then I was just sat there, my eyes just started going, my nose was running like a tap, and I thought, I can't do this, I'm going home, I'm just going to make myself ill, I don't need to catch a carp that much. And that was the latest of a series of disasters. So That's my depressing fishing.
It must be even more depressing because you can't even just forget about your syndicate late when you're not there, because Mr. Don, Derek, is doing a live feed from there at least twice a week. And then he managed to bag the big one. Shout out to Derek the Don, catching a 50 from there this week, didn't he?
He did. He had Porky at, I think it was about £50.8, and shortly after they started spawning again, so they closed it for a week again.
Oh dear.
Which is you can't knock enough for closing a lake for spawning. It's what good fishery gaffers do, to be fair. Going to protect your livestock.
Yeah, it was very hot again last week, wasn't it? And I noticed on a lot of lakes they started spawning again.
It's just one of those things when you get a lake like Monks, which has got quite a lot of fish, and with the progressive stocking that's put in, they're not all the same age or even strain, and they spawned at different times, a lot of them. I believe they went about 5 or 6 times from what I hear last year.
Yeah, I've noticed that lakes with different groups of fish, that they spawn individually. I used to think it was just like the small ones and the big ones spawn separately, but it would make more sense that different stockings kind of stick together. A little bit, bar a few that may be a defect to one of the other groups or something.
Yeah, I think age of the fish must have something to do with it, because, you know, imagine if you're you're the equivalent of a 19-year-old carp, because remember when you were 19, that were it. You know, if it did move, you wanted to stick your pecker in it. When you get to over 40, you just think, oh, can I be bothered? Nah, once a year, I suppose I better. And then you're one of the last ones to go.
Yeah, very true. But unfortunately, like, as human beings, we can say no when we can't be asked. It's pretty difficult for the fish if a young virile teenager, you know, goes steaming up to you know, the old big female in the lake and goes, "I'm having a bit." It's it's like, "I did not give my consent. Go away." I don't think that goes down in a fishing lake.
Yeah, do you know carp is only one letter away from rape?
I don't like the way your mind's working today, Mark. What's going on?
You're suggesting that a young carp rape middle-aged big old fat females?
Well, they do, because it's one danger of, you know, when you've got some like old fish, like maybe in a low stock lake, and then you introduce some stockies. It has been happened in history that you know, the old big uns have died after spawning because they've been bashed around by the young uns.
Definitely, it's a thing. But then, you know, the flip side is, if you don't stock it, you don't keep a number of young fish coming through, when your big uns are dead, nobody wants to join your lake anymore.
Yeah, well, I think the moral of the story there is you need a restocking program consistently, not just wait till your 40-year-old fish are dying one by one and then go, "Oh shit, we've only got 5 originals left, we better start putting some fish in." You know, at that point, it's probably shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. You know, a lot of good fisheries, they have a constant restocking program yearly, don't they? So I think that must be better, so that, you know, there's always fish coming up behind as it goes. Not really heard of any spawning casualties too badly this year. We had the Walthamstow situation, which they did track that down to a
Springer-Deemer.
Yeah, Springer-Deemer. Was it 700 fish in the end?
Yeah, 700 fish in the, was it the number one? Without the details in front of me, I'm just going on what I remember, so correct me, people, if I'm wrong. But that was a lot of fish, although that lake, isn't that the one that's got like 1,000 or 2,000 carp in it? I thought it was one of the ones they use for the matches. It was really well stocked.
I don't know too much about the Walthamstow Reses, having never fished there.
No, me neither.
I've always fancied it.
The fact it's nearly 200 miles away in days only has put me off.
Yeah, I have lived in that neck of the woods over the years, so I had intended on fishing it or staying down there or whatever. But I'll tell you what was interesting. I went to, talking about sort of London area, not too far from there. My dad lives in Bow, which is sort of just past Stratford. It's like East London. We went to stay with him a few weeks ago, me and the missus. We went to a house festival on Finsbury Park for the day. Anyway, we stayed over at my dad's, and he lives right by Victoria Park, which is one of the big sort of London park lakes. and he was like, oh, come and have a look at the car. You always see the fish. And we went down there. It was a pretty warm day, and I was blown away. There's not just carp, there were hundreds of them, and they were the tamest fish I've ever seen. They were just all in the edge. People were hand feeding them bread and stuff, just throwing it in. I must have carried 100-150. A couple of kois, majority of them commons. Then you'd see some pretty mirrors every now and again, and then you'd see like a 20. 20s were few and far between. Then I saw one that was definitely 27 to 32. You know, it looked 30 compared to the others. But interesting, watching them in shallow water, really clear water, that sort of close in, they were not spooked by ducks, dogs, birds, anything. Like, they were the tamest fish I've ever seen up close, bar maybe the ones at Alton Towers. But even the Alton Towers one spook a bit, you know, if you like stamp on the ground or move quickly, like they'll swirl on the surface, they'll come straight back. But these weren't even doing that. I don't know if it's because it's all concrete around it maybe, and there's less vibrations. I don't know, but it was some very tame carp, and like I say, I've seen one good one. A couple of 20s, and the majority was sort of 10 to 18 pound, I would say. But there's a few pretty mirrors in there, and there was a lot of fish just up this one end, where this looks sort of little cafe and ice cream stand is, and where sort of people sit. There's a big pagoda in there as well. And it did make me wonder. I mean, I don't know how, when, why they were stocked, but remember Alfie Ralph, was it? Nash guy used to go around fishing, young lad, on his bike fishing all the London Park Lakes. He's had some whackers, 30s and 40s. Is every park lake in London full of carp? I don't know. Give us a shout, London people, and tell us. But I was blown away. I was expecting to see a few fish when my dad said, come down here and see, have a look at the carp. And there's hundreds of them. I wish I had a little scope rod with me. Would have been perfect.
You want a little, get one of the little dwarfs, the sawn off, you can fit them in your rucksack, not even get caught. I mean, there's a big lake in Doncaster down at Lakeside, which is imaginatively named. And there's not many carp in it. You know, it's never been stocked. But what's in? Basically, they've been dropped in from ponds and that. Mm. And they've grown. You walk around there in the middle of the day, there's people throwing bread at the ducks and everything. It's clear water. It does get quite weedy. But you see these bright white and orange things swimming around. And there's one in there. It's kind of like a pale orangey sort of colour. It's definitely female. I've seen it fat, and I've seen it looking like a racing snake. You know, definitely the same fish. And that's, you know, mid 20, upper 20 when it's full. You know, it's a good fish. The only thing is, one part of the lake, we just nicknamed it the basin, it's like a big square end. You know, it's all man-made. That's a bit where they generally hang out, where you can regularly find them. It's also got a block of flats overhanging them, and you walk around there at night with a fishing rod, and there's a miserable old cow in one of the balconies starts shouting she's going to phone the police on you. Yeah, I went down there a couple of times when I used to work on the taxis. We'd finish about midnight, and maybe my pal Big Chris would have a walk around there and see if we could find them. And you know, you can find them easy as hell in the day. At night, when there's no one chucking bread at the ducks, it's not as easy. But yeah, we got shouted by that woman a couple of times. And the last time my mate showed her his ring piece, so she probably did phone the police on that occasion. We didn't hang about to find out.
I'm going to go fishing tomorrow. So basically, I've got my mega holiday coming up. We haven't been great at getting some carp casts out. Well, I've not been on holiday, so I don't know how well it's going to be while we're away, but I am geared up to do it. I'm taking the mics. I've tried, tested out Skyping off my phone through the computer the other week. So as long as I've got 3G or 4G, then it does work. So hopefully we can do it. I'm maybe looking at doing some sort of blog while I'm away. I mean, we're not fishing for the whole 5 weeks, but I am fishing for probably 3 weeks of it, of the five weeks. I've got a week on a lake in Austria where Nash have done, it's not released yet, but Nash have done their latest social, where all the lads at work there go on a trip with Kevin and Alan. Pretty amazing lake in Austria. It's like three sort of 10 acre lakes next to each other, full of crayfish. The one that I'm fishing is, but it also has 2 90-pound commons in there. So it's obviously everything's going to be low weights this time of year, but or lower weights, but you know,
yeah, it'll only be 80.
Yeah, only. I think it's a fair few 60s. I don't want to spoil what the lads caught, but they did get amongst a few good ones. So I have a swim on there, but in 2 weeks' time, we're going from there to Lake Bled. We all know how fantastic that place is from my trip last year and the previous Eurobanks. I've got 4 or 5 days on there. And we're going to a festival in Croatia, and then after the week-long festival, we've got a week on a lake in Croatia. Not one that's very well known about to the English. It's not the one that sort of everybody goes to. You know, did you see Briggs is on a Croatian lake at the minute? That Frank Warwick does trips out to as well.
I didn't notice, but I didn't take a massive amount of notice, if I'm honest. But I did see
Briggsy had a 50 from, I think he's more than 10 different countries now.
Oh, yeah, he's 10 different countries. I did see, yeah, that's an on the net. 10th, yes. 50 from, oh, sorry, 10th, 50 from different countries. Big up to the Briggsy.
Yes, that's the lake that it's fairly commercial, I believe, compared to a lot of the lakes in Croatia, but that's the one that a lot of the English chaps are going to. I know Lewis from Fat Fish and Paul Bowers went just before Christmas. Frank's been going over there quite a bit. Obviously Briggsy's on there now. I think Briggsy said he fished it about 12 years ago, but the fish were nowhere near as big as what they are now. I know that's got, I'm sure that's got a 90 pounder in it as well. But anyway, yeah, this one I'm going to is a lot less known. One of the chaps that we met through Alan and Ollie, Ollie Davis on Bled last year, he lives pretty near Bled, I think, but he does a lot of fishing through the summer in Croatia. He put us onto this lake. He said it's one of the best lakes in Croatia at the minute. I don't think there's any 90 pounders in there, because it's fish only get that big. You know, natural 70 pounders might get to 90 pounders if it's a commercially fished lake with lots of boilies going in, but there's definitely mid 70s in there in this lake. But yeah, the shout out to Gasper who put us onto this lake. He's not about the commercial ones. That one that Frank and everyone go to, when I mentioned that to him, he's like, yeah, not for me, that place. I think it's the, you know, the equivalent of Linear or somewhere, you know, like the Croatian equivalent of Linear. But you know, it's got some fantastic fishing in. To be honest, it looked really nice as well. And so, saw the pictures from Briggsy, like loads of big tall reeds behind him and stuff. Like with the fish that he caught, it looked all right to me. But Gasper is extremely hardcore. If anybody follows him on Facebook, the guy catches lumps constantly. You know, ridiculously big fish, you know, from that part of the world. But yeah, he's put us onto this lake, so we've got a week there. I actually bought, because Rachel's with me, my better half, Lake Bled's fairly comfortable for having your missus with you, because we do a lot of fishing near the campsite, where, you know, you can fish off the beach, where you've got you know, you've got a bar and a restaurant right behind you, and you can sunbathe while you're fishing, and you know, there's plenty of fish to be caught off there. So that's going to be quite comfortable. The Austria Lake is fairly comfortable as well. There's a supermarket right in the corner by the lake, and a McDonald's, and there's a tackle shop there, and I think that's fairly comfortable. You can park behind the swim. I've got the camper van, and testing out the new Nash. You know, Avid do that screen house. It's like a sort of gazebo-y bivvy type thing.
Yeah, I've seen that. Seen that up at shows. It looks good.
Yeah, well, Nash are bringing one out. I've got one of the prototypes to take with me, so be able to get that up on the side of the lake. Big bivvy thing. Really looking forward to barbecuing and stuff. So that's going to be quite comfortable fishing there. The lake in Croatia, I'm not sure how comfortable that is. Now obviously when you've got a female with you, then toilet issues the main thing. Whenever I've took my missus fishing or my daughter, their biggest concern is, where am I going to the toilet? I'm not peeing in a bush with the other men around, you know. It's always been a bone of contention. So I bought a little toilet tent and a kamikaze, it's called.
Kamikaze.
It's called a kamikaze. Yeah, so just a little. It's like a glorified bucket. It's a bit more comfortable than the bucket. It arrived today. I've sat on it. It seems all right. It's got a little toilet roll hold off the side. I've bought some like chemical stuff you can put inside it. You can actually dig a hole if you want and put it over and just drop it over the hole and then obviously fill the hole up after it if you want. It seems pretty decent. It wasn't expensive. It was only about 16 quid or something. And I'm thinking, why have I never, in 30 years of carp fishing, why have I never seen anybody with one? Seems way more hygienic. But yeah.
Have you ever met a hygienic carp angler?
Good point.
And I know people who have been given the nickname Blue Suede Teeth. I think that says it all.
Yeah. But yeah, so I've been buying loads of...
We'll not talk about what that person did in a pan.
No, we won't. We won't. So yeah, I've been buying all the Nod stuff. Really, you know, we've got the big prototype shower off Nash, the portable toilets, little tent for the toilets. I even bought a shower. Again, you know, I'll quite happily go a week without a shower when I'm fishing, but you know, trying to make it comfortable enough so the missus doesn't get halfway through the trip and go, "I want to go home," you know, is obviously something that's on my mind. As I said, Bled's going to be fairly comfortable. Austria's going to be comfortable because I know there's proper toilets and stuff, and she wants to go walking up to the supermarket and get some fresh food and croissants and meat and stuff every day for the barbecue, then I think she'd be fine there. It's just a week on the Croatia Lake, which is a bit out in the sticks, I think, that I'm going to make sure we've got a home from home, as it were. But if anybody else out there sort of has all this stuff that they take fishing with them, I remember where maybe 15, 20 years ago in the watching Matt Hayes on, I forget where he was fishing, but one of his programs that he did, he actually did 3 days carping, which is sort of unusual for him and his filming and the sort of lakes he goes to. But he was doing 3 days and he had a washing up bowl with him and washing up liquid and everything. I remember thinking, wow, that's like, it kind of would make life easier, you know, and way more hygienic. And you finish, I do a lot of cooking when I'm fishing, and you know, finish, wash everything up, and then he was having a shave in it in the mornings. He was boiling his kettle, getting hot water in it and having a proper face wash, soap in there and having a shave in it. I was thinking that'd look really good if it wouldn't get the piss taken out of me on every single lake I've ever fished. Like
do you know, I remember walking, this is back on pit one, walking into the reed swim, there was a fella there. I knew he was down there. He's another northernish fella, Graham Slaughter.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, did he have the world record for rainbow a good few years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was halfway through a shave. He's got, well, he was doing it, you know, old school. He's got his razor, he's got his half his face covered in foam. It was.
Well, let us know if you take some comforts above and beyond baby wipes, fishing, whatever it is, washing up bowl, or I mean, it makes sense now. Fishing's changed, hasn't it, in the last 10 years? You know, most lakes now, it's like, can you think 15 years ago of a lake you fished on that had ready-made swims, like, you know, nice leveled flat, maybe wood chip or gravel, sometimes little steps or a path down to it, you know, rather than just a sloping bank like with some grass. The only place I ever fished when I was young was Cuttle Mill, that kind of had like ready-made swims. Everything else was, you know, you find a gap and you fish in it, and it was what it was if it had trees or bushes, or usually on the slope. And now it's, you know, most lakes have got swims that are actually, you know, made, dug, you know, done on work parties by the members, even if they're not, you know, like lined with railway sleepers and bloody, you know, and then filled in with gravel. They still kind of have like designated areas, don't they, these days? So, I mean, fishing's got a lot more comfortable. The equipment's comfortable then. So what are you taking that makes it even more comfortable, other than the obvious sort of iPhones and, you know, electrical bits? But anybody take a Kazi with them, or a bucket with a... Well, once I was looking for a portable toilet, there's loads of like bucket type things with actual toilet seats on. you know, for like a tenner and stuff. I'm like, why doesn't everybody have one of them? I'm not against the idea of if I owned a lake, and especially if it was, I owned it as opposed to just leased it and it was in a field, you know, if it was anywhere near a house or my house, I don't want to be thinking of how many turds there are, you know, knocking around the bushes. I think I'd kind of enforce everybody to have either some sort of bag or bucket system.
Yeah, you know, we see a lot of people carrying around these little black bags where they pick up the dog mess with.
Exactly.
They can make little carpers mess bags where you make your deposit, you pick it up, you bag it up and take it home.
Yeah, and Deadman's, the Manchester Lake, they supply a spade. And you have to bury it, you know, if you're found not doing so. And there's an area to go and do it in, and you kind of have, how did we get onto toilet humour? Oh yeah, me buying all the stuff for the holiday, so.
We usually do, but so that area on Deadman's, how long before it actually becomes, the earth becomes saturated with poo? And you're digging several holes to find a fresh area so you're not pooing on poo?
Well, there's only five swims, and it, you know, it's not heavily fished, that lake. I don't know, but I mean, obviously, I don't know how long it takes to sort of mush into the ground and, you know, become compost or whatever. I don't really know how long it takes, but it's not long, is it? Like,
do there a lot of mushrooms grow around there?
I don't know. I've not had a ticket for years. I don't know. But yeah, I've been buying all the creature comfort things, but I've been looking at it thinking, how much will I use these in the future now I've got them? What else have I bought, like comfy items? Not sure. I mean, a tent, a toilet tent. Oh yeah, I bought a shower, but have you seen those like solar showers? It's just like a black bag.
I've seen them, yeah, you hang it up, it warms up and then...
Yeah, I got an electric one that runs off 12 volt, so you can just like dip the bottom bit into any sort of bucket of water, or, you know, container or whatever. It works. Have you seen how the pumps work on like the camper vans and stuff? They work in the same sort of way the sinks do. Yeah. It has like a 12 volt pump and it pumps the water up. Again, not expensive. I think it was like $17.99 or something off Amazon. And I've bought like a black container to put it in. Obviously all the places we're going, it's really warm in the daytime, it's like 30 degrees plus every day, so yeah, just leave a full thing, a 20 litre thing of water, leave it in the sun, and it'll keep the missus happy for having a wash and stuff. Obviously if you're sweating up in them sort of countries as well, it's nice to have a freshen up, because we're away for 5 weeks, it's a long time to be away. Yeah, we're not doing all of it on the bank. We've got a few nights in hotels. We've got an apartment for the first week in Croatia. But I want to blog make some sort of either video diary or audio diary of the exact trip. I'm just not really sure where to publish it, whether to do it on our Carpcast YouTube page or, you know, like vlogs, just sort of do some video logs.
Yeah. Well, why don't you... Yeah, have a word with Ollie, get his advice on what to do, and sure, Nash would be interested in that sort of thing for their YouTube. That's what Briggsy does, he goes out on his own, and then the Nash one. I think Simon Crowe's do as well when he does them.
Yeah, I've got a GoPro, I don't know how great the battery is in it, it's a couple of years old now, it's a Hero 3, I think, they're a few years old than ones.
You've got a digital SLR.
Yeah, it's not got video on my SLR.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Which one you got?
An old one, is it like 400, 450 or something?
I've got the 400 and I have video off it.
Might be a 350 then, I'm sure it hasn't, I'm 100% sure it hasn't got video.
Right.
But I do have an iPhone and they're pretty good these days, aren't they? Especially the 7. And it's waterproof, you can dunk it underwater. The iPhone 7. That's one thing I'm looking forward to doing on Bled. We only discovered it on the last couple of days, but there's tons of carp around the sort of beach area where everybody sunbathes. It's like a man-made beach full of sand right by the restaurant. We ignored it all week, chasing around the lake, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And on the last 2 days, and we discovered that all the carp, loads of carp were in that beach, and Spenny went out snorkeling, he's seen 40 pounders just swimming about under people's feet, just not bothered at all. So I've got some, like, a couple of cheap snorkels we bought 1 year from Ibiza, so I'm definitely taking them and going to get my iPhone underwater. But yeah, I want to blog it all. I'm certainly going to record it all, but I wouldn't mind doing like a daily blog somewhere, you know, that we can just that we can document the journey on, just like a story almost. But if you do it on like Facebook story, on Snapchat or something, it just disappears after a day or two, and obviously I want to keep it.
And the other thing, what about you know, on some of the extras we've done, the on the bank series where we're basically documenting a session, about something like that?
Yeah, certainly. I could do both. I could do an audio one as well.
Yeah.
But I just think 5 weeks is going to be a lot of stuff. I'm certainly going to record it. Whether we can get Reese to put a section on the website so we can do it. We can actually do it on our website, maybe. I'm not sure. I need it. Reese is away in France this week, so I'm going to have a chat with him when he gets back and have a look at options. Maybe they'll just start a new YouTube channel for it, and then just use that YouTube link on our Facebook pages and stuff. And we could always do Facebook video. They don't really disappear, do they?
No, they just stay there forever. Just go into your albums, I think.
Yeah, you can record Facebook video direct to your phone as well afterwards, can't you?
Well, Derek Rich is on his Facebook page, all his raves.
Yeah, I don't know how long Facebook keep them for, or whether they last a certain amount of time. I don't know. I don't think so, actually, because I'm sure I've seen some for like previous Northern Angling shows that we've done, live videos that are still there from like a year or two ago. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to look into it, but yeah, I'm going to document this trip somehow, some way. I'm going to head up to Clearwater actually tomorrow. Today as we're recording this is Wednesday. You'll listen to this probably not tonight, but I'll probably get it out either in the morning, Thursday morning. You should get it before Sunday anyway. And I basically need to sort out, the last time I went fishing was in France, I think, where we flew, so all my equipment's all over the place because I didn't take it all, and you know, put stuff into a smaller tackle. Basically everything's in a complete and utter mess. So I'm going to go to Clearwater just for the purpose of, until you actually go fishing, you don't realise what you haven't got. Do you ever have that, like a sorting out session? You go fishing and realise what you forgot, what you need, and make lists. But I think everybody needs a sorting out session.
No, I'm just swiveling around on the wife's Lego building chair. I tell you what, there's not a lot of squeaks coming down this podcast. I think your new your gaming chair that you're in seems to have cured the problem. Well, and it just creaks it.
It creaks with leather, but it's not an actual squeaking sound like the old chair was. Yeah, I gave the old chair away to Spenny and Reedy for their studio. So listen for all the Kaluki tracks that Spenny releases. I have a listen for the squeaking. I'm going to go to Clearwater tomorrow. I've not been up there since I did a tuition earlier in the year when it was cold. Heapy Bob's been up there a bit. One of the chaps that came on the Carpcast social to France with us, Jason. Jason Dodd, shout out to him. He had a load of fish from Kellett's, the Runswater, last week. A load of pretty mirrors. It looks like they've got a really good stock in there. Seem quite small at the minute. Low doubles and stuff, up to like £15. But he had a hatful of them last week. I think he had 7 or 8. So I don't know if I'm going to drop on there or drop on Jimmy's Lake, which is the sort of one that's going syndicate. But you can fish it as a day ticket this year. And you know, I'm actually going to meet Alex and maybe just getting it a short interview with him for next week's show, because we'll try and get another show out before I go away. I'm going away next Thursday morning, so maybe like Tuesday or Wednesday, Mark, if we can get together and record another one before I go. But yeah, hopefully we'll be able to put Alex out on that, because he's done fantastic things there. If you want to go have a look at clearwaterfisheries.co.uk or get onto the Clearwater Facebook page. Heapy Bob's, I think, a moderator on there as well. And you can check out all the latest catch reports and all the stuff that that Alex has been doing down there. I know the complex is fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing it. They had loads of diggers and it was all muddy and stuff when I went down there in the, it was like back end of the winter, and I'm looking forward to seeing it tomorrow actually. I'm going to go down there, just use it as an excuse to spool up my line. That was something actually, Mark, because I'm going away and fishing a number of different lakes, I know one of the Croatia lake that I can't use boats. I'm going to have a boat and a motor and battery and all that stuff with me, but I know the Croatia lake we can't use it, it's all casting, and I know it's quite a big lake as well.
You're going to cast?
Yeah, I always cast. Yeah, I do a lot of casting. But anyway, I've been looking at that tapered line. I know Fox do it and Corda do it, but I really like the idea of it, and more I speak to people, it seems to be the future in line. You know, so for those of you who don't know, you buy it on a spool, it's like 300 metres long, and it's like £30 line at either end, and then like something thinner in the middle. You can get like a £15 line in the middle and 30 leader, or you can get a real chucking one, which is like sort of £10-12 line in the middle with £30 at each end, and it's tapered, no knots. Lots of lakes have leader bands where you're not allowed to put a leader on, so if you've got a cast a long way, it seems like an absolute no-brainer. But I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just use that all the time? I mean, we all want tougher line near our rig and tubing and, you know, everything at that end, don't we? It just makes complete sense to me to use it kind of permanently. What do you think?
Time is great, so I've got a mouthful of water there, but yeah, it does make a lot of sense. I mean, you don't need to use any sort of leader at the other end. No lead claw, no lead free stuff, and maybe just, would you even put tubing on it? Surely it'd be thick enough at the other end.
Yeah, super thick. I think they do actually sell like little tungsten weights stuff to actually weight it down, a bit like people use for the naked chods and stuff. You can use just little like tungsten beads and stuff, can't you? I mean, I like tungsten tubing if I'm going to use it. You know, if I'm going to use anything sort of like that. Excuse me, tickly cough. So yeah, I probably would probably use something to weigh down the end, whether I use, like you say, some sort of tungsten bead or something. But yeah, I've been looking at it. I've not used the Corda or the Fox one. They seem to be the only people doing it at the minute. I believe Ridge Monkey have got one coming out. Shout out to Ridge Monkey. I got one of their head torches the other day, actually. I was going to do a true review on it, Mark, because have you seen a lot of talk recently about all these rechargeable head torches? Seems to be a few people doing them now.
True review. Yeah, I've seen a lot of hype about the Ridge Monkey ones. We've just got the Fox ones in the shop. They're quite impressive as well. I've not had a proper look at them because we've been that busy. You know, I need to,
yeah,
to play with this stuff. You don't go a job in a tackle shop to work, but we've having to do that lately.
Well, my last head torch was the good Fox one that's got like a really long beam and then a wide beam, and then it's red, yeah. And then it flashes at the back, you know, that goes completely over your head like a miner's torch, and there's like red lights on the back, so you could obviously use it for like cycling and stuff as well, and it was really good. And to be honest, when I heard Fox were doing a rechargeable one, I was like, wow, if they do the equivalent of that rechargeable. Because we all have recharging packs these days, don't we? Everybody's either got the 10 quid ones you can buy off Amazon that give you like 3 or 4 charges of your phone, or, you know, if you've spent a bit of dough, you've got the Ridge Monkey one, which does like 20 odd charges. But like, I've got the Ridge Monkey one. I wouldn't be without it. It gets used every day in the house. You know, the missus uses it, my daughter uses it. It's just handy to have with you, sat by the sofa. You know, you don't have to worry about, you can't use your phone, can you? The leads that come with your phones are really short, like 1 meter long. So you try plugging it in and messing about on Facebook and stuff while you're watching telly. It's awkward. So that my Ridge Monkey thing, it gets used every day by the whole family. But obviously it's got like a cigarette charger on it, a 12 volt charger on it, and 2 USB ports. And pretty much everything Ridge Monkey sell likewise now is rechargeable. So having a rechargeable head torch just makes total sense. It's not the fact that it's hard to replace batteries, it's just running out of them when you're fishing, isn't it? And I don't know about you, but I always feel if I'm like, want to read a book or something when I'm fishing, it's always like, oh, I can't run the batteries out on the torch, I might need them during the session, during the session or what. It's like a, it was always a mental thing, because when you, when I was younger, you know, you ran out of batteries of something on a session and it ruined the session. I mean, we're all a bit older and more organised now. You know, I normally have a load of spare batteries for everything in the vehicle somewhere. But when you're a kid on sort of limited money and stuff, you don't do that. But so I don't know if it's just ingrained in my head, but I'd always try and conserve batteries of anything that I've got. Or, you know, I wouldn't sit up all night reading with my head torch on. But we've got rechargers with us. There seems to be a few rechargeable head torches out now, and I've actually got the Ridge Monkey one right in front of me. And do you know the main thing I like about it, other than the obvious how it functions? But you can put it on either way. It doesn't matter how you pick the torch up and put it on your head, it's the right way up. Does that make sense? There's an on and off button on the top and on the bottom that does exactly the same thing. And you know, like some torches, they angle, they tilt down. This tilts both ways, like exactly the same amount. So it, again, it doesn't matter if you put the thing on upside down. There is no top and bottom, basically.
Actually makes a lot of sense. I like that.
Makes complete sense, yeah. Because obviously, usually when you need your torch, it's at night, so like in the dark. So you,
well, you're not going to need it in the day, are you?
Especially if you're panicking and you just like grab it, you know, side of your bed or whatever. And the thing is, like the Fox ones and stuff, they have that, you know, that miner's type head bit where they have the battery pack at the back, and they've got like, it's like there's three straps almost, isn't it? It goes round your head and like one over the middle on the centre of your head, and you try picking them up at night, especially if you're in a rush. What's going on there?
What's going on? I've just got a notification, and you're going to have listen to this. We know what this is. Everybody. Which is live. He's the guy. Hey, we'll turn him off. Sorry,
dude. Get it on with the dawn. So yeah, quite often when you pick those ones with the three bits up, they get tangled up in the night. And the other thing is, you can't go to sleep with them around your neck because you've got the bit that goes over your head. So, you know, if you're like expecting fish and you know you're on fish and you know you're going to be up all night or getting bites or whatever, I don't know if you ever do it, but it's handy to go to sleep with your head torch around your neck. So it's kind of all, you know, it's ready. So yeah, there's this... this Ridge Monkey one, you can do all of that. It's quite bulky, I would say. It looks like quite like the depth of it from front to back. But I'm assuming that's something to do with the swiveling. Like it swivels both ways, an even amount. I'm sure that's something to do with that design. But it's great. It's got a green light on it instead of the red, which is supposed to be better for your eyes and better for the swim at night. It's got the... If you've never used like a really good... head torch that's got a beam on it, the Fox one did it as well, and this new Ridge Monkey one does it. It's got like a long narrow beam. You know, the Fox one you have to actually focus it. This is a separate light on the Ridge Monkey one. It's got like two lights. And if you're ever like casting to a far margin or something, you know, 70 yards, 80 yards away, you can actually put the head torch on, put it on that long beam, and you can actually see the far margins. I remember using the Fox one in Romania when I first got it about 5 or 6 years ago, and focusing it on that long beam, I was casting some reeds that were like to a basically a wall of reeds on the far side, and bang the head torch on, you can see the lead land every single time with the long beam. Anyway, this Ridge Monkey one's got that facility. It's got its own separate light that does that. And if you haven't had a torch that does that, it's invaluable. You know, one that will go like 90 yards, maybe even 100 yards in a long beam. So yeah, if you're casting to a snag or a far margin or something like that. Yeah, it's mint. I've used it for doing a few jobs around the house. I shall be using it for fishing for the first time tomorrow when I go. But yeah, I... highly recommend the Ridge Monkey rechargeable. And I got one of those duo lights while I was at it. You ever had like a bivy light? Have you seen those, Mark?
Yes, I've got one.
Have you? I seem to be the only person that hasn't got one. Well, I have now.
Yeah. I did have one. The wife stole it.
Yeah, they're great. They obviously magnet to your bivvy, so anywhere in it. They've got a motion sensor, haven't they? They've got a couple of different colours, dark and light, and the amount of people swims I walk into at night, they've got one on. I'm thinking, why haven't I got one of them? So yeah, I got one. So yeah, shout out to Ridge Monkey again. Rechargeable. If you've got the Ridge Monkey power pack or any other decent power pack, you've just got power permanently. And for somebody that fished 30 years ago when we were roughing it at night, you know, borrowed little pencil torches, you know, I had a method of making a head torch out of those little, you know, like those little Eveready or Energizer torches you get now.
Yeah, I used to wear some like a baseball cap back to front and you just slot it in the top.
That's exactly it. Yeah, I didn't wear a baseball cap because I looked like an absolute weapon with a baseball cap on, but yeah, I used to use you know, just like a normal sort of woolly hat. But yeah, wedge it in the top, like sticking forwards. But you know, they had like reusable, changeable bulbs in them, didn't they? And sometimes you just get to the lake and the bloody bulb wasn't working because it'd been knocked or whatever, and the filament had gone in it, and there was all sorts of things. And now, just having an LED torch that's rechargeable, you've got permanent power wherever you are. Same with the bivvy light; it comes on. You know, you can set it so it comes on when you move. Just everything. It's like fishing's getting really comfortable. I mean, I've got a kamikaze. What more can we say? I can leave the duo light in there.
Yeah, I think it's I think you just sold out. What's wrong? We're joining a syndicate where there is a portaloo in the car park, and you just sat down there doing your business, counting spiders and earwigs that are dropping on you. That's how it should be.
This head torch has got a button on it. I don't know what it does. I'm assuming I've sussed it. It tells you how much battery's left. It's got like 4 blue bars. You press the side button, there's only 3 of them coming on now, and 4. I thought it was like a motion sensor, but it's not. It looks like a battery. I like it. I shall be using it. Yeah. The best bit of it is the fact you can put it on either way, and there's a switch on top and bottom. Is it? Well, there isn't a top and bottom. Whichever way you put it on, it's right. So yeah, shout out to Ridge Monkey. They seem to be doing some quite sort of, not niche, but individual products. You know, they haven't got like a range of everything, have they? I know they are going to start to do some end tackle and stuff, I believe. When I was asking about tapered lines, I believe they have got one of them coming out, because somebody from Ridge Monkey actually messaged under my post saying if I can hang on not buying my tapered line for a bit, then they've got a good one coming out that Terry Edmonds has been testing. Yeah, we've been ranting quite some time, haven't we?
We have, yeah. And you know, if Terry Edmonds has tested them, they're going to be strong, because he generally breaks things.
Yeah, he can break.
Usually high-end rods. He was cracked off and put another crater on the moon as well, apparently.
he can break rods at will, can't he? So we're going to do some listeners' questions in a bit. First of all, I went to see Rob Hales a couple of weeks ago. I was going to fish. It was stupidly windy, and the swim that I was going to fish on it was like wooden boards. I had nothing to screw a bivvy into it, and it was like, remember them gale force winds we had a few weeks ago?
So
I ended up not fishing, but I had a guided tour around all these lakes. The Sitch, which I've actually booked for a Carpcast social next spring during the open access that they have on there. That lake was amazing. It was, it's beautiful, just set in a forest, trees all around it, typical Shropshire Mere, and it's stuffed full of fish. It'll be perfect for a Carpcast social because it's just got so many fish in it. I think there's 600-700 fish. I can't remember off the top of my head. I've actually got done a little interview with Rob. He's telling us about all the lakes, but I've also took a week on Acton Top and Bottom Lake, which will be available to Carpcast listeners. Again, we're not releasing the dates or anything yet because it's next spring during the close season when he does the open access. But yeah, there'll be an opportunity to fish the famous Acton Lakes. He showed me his fish breeding setup where he bred Big Rig, the infamous Big Rig. I saw the Avenue Syndicates, Little Avenue, and Western Park as well. And they're all stunning, to be fair. You know, they're all in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, very near to sort of Midlands. They're all near Telford, which is sort of West Midlands, not too far from there. Hour or two from the northwest, but or a couple of hours from the northwest. But yeah, he's got a pretty decent setup down there. And I don't know. I mean, I saw the monument as well, and having not really knowing how I would fish any of them lakes. You know, if I wanted to, you know, do you ever think, right, we're going to go to a day ticket somewhere? You know, you instantly think of your Lynch Hills or your Oxford Lakes, you know, somewhere like that. And I just never would think of the monument, and they're stunning lakes, to be fair. Quite like them, and yeah, I think people may have some misconceptions about his lakes and you know, what he does down there. So I went down and had a chat with him, and I'll let him take it from it. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. Welcome back once again to the Carpcast, Mr. Rob Hales. How are we doing today?
Not very well, thank you. I've got a sore back, but other than that, I'm fine.
Have you got a sore mouth? I believe you were a dentist yesterday, weren't you?
Yeah, I was indeed. No, check up. I've got to suffer that one in a few weeks, but hey-ho.
Well, at least you can talk without dribbling, so
it's, absolutely.
No major work. So we welcome you to the Carpcast. As an advertiser, we're hopefully going to make people aware of the various lakes that you've got. Maybe destigmatise them with some people's perceptions that don't really know what you're doing there. I've heard all sorts of rumours over the last 20 years of you know, stealing the biggest fish out of the Orient and dropping it in his private lakes. And I'm sure you're very aware of it, and I'd like to put a few people straight, really, because I've been down the fisheries, I've visited them all. It's in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. It's very accessible for people from the Midlands, as well as the Northwest, where I am. I mean, I'm only 2 hours away from the majority of your fisheries.
Yeah.
So what have you tried to do with the fishery? I mean, what's been your general philosophy? Because I know money wasn't the primary goal for doing what you're doing, so you must love fish and fishing.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to retire from a business when I was 40. I'm 52 now, and I was financially sound because of that. I still co-owned the business, which was in the toy industry, but my real love has always been fishing, and in particular carp fishing. And I've been in carp fishing for a long, long time, you know, God, 35 years or more. You know, fishing seriously. So it was just to set up a business, really, to get me outside. I was always in an office, you know, or on the train to London or on the plane to the Far East. And to get me outside, build carp fisheries and try and offer something for everybody, really. I was conscious that big fish were out of the reach financially for some people. They couldn't all travel abroad, and you know, a lot of people couldn't get access to lakes where the 30s and 40s were, because they're all private syndicates. So you know, we started off with a little syndicate lake, and then we moved into the day ticket fisheries at the monument. You know, in 2003 we opened Monument One, and more recently, 3 or 4 years ago, we opened Monument 2, you know, and these are day ticket lakes. Anybody can ring up and book on, go online and book on, and you've got access to a huge head of fish, you know, well into the mid-40s. So that was it, really, and then it sort of progressed from there. You know, the demand was such that it sort of grew with me, really. Carp fishing, the bubble seems to keep getting bigger and bigger. That'll continue.
How did you sort of source the first fish that you did? Were the original fisheries Acton, were they the first ones that you took on?
Yeah, the very first lake I ever had was a small syndicate on a private farm called Atwell Pool, and we leased that. And me and a few guys, some names of the past, Brian Guy, Garner and Des Taylor, one or two of us. There was only about eight of us. It was a little pool. We leased that, and we got some carp to grow there. We managed to get one to 40 pound, but the fishery wasn't big enough. But that sowed the seed for what I wanted to do, really. But when we very first started Acton, yeah, that was the first big syndicate water project. You know, we acquired some fish, of the strain of which that was very, very prolific growing. As you said, we discussed the other day, not particularly scaly, but fast growing. We wanted to get big fish. You know, we only live once. We haven't got three lifetimes to see these things come to fruition, so we wanted fish that would put on 6, 7, 8 pounds a year. And when we stocked the fish into Acton back in 1994 or 5, you know, there were only singles and low doubles, and we, you know, within 6 years we had the likes of Andy Little and Kevin Maddox and lots of famous anglers joining the syndicate, travelling from the south to fish it. Such was the calibre of the water back then.
It's you mentioned the fact that your fish are growing very big. I just want to touch on the fact, I mean, a lot of the strains of carp that we've got in the UK, they originally came from abroad. You know, even as far back as sort of 60, 70 years ago, the Donald Leeny fish, he imported fish from abroad. He grew them in his own fish farm. They happen to be pretty ones, but they've kind of got a ceiling on how big they grow. I mean, you mentioned there, we haven't maybe got 50, 60 years. You can grow 40s and 50 pounders doing exactly the same thing Donald Leeny did, but with fish with less scales. You've grown fish within 5 years to sort of 40, 50 pound, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We've got, you know, we've got some exceptional strains, and everybody to their own. But I personally, if somebody wanted to sell me some English heritage fish, the parentage has always been in the UK. Let's take the Leeny fish, albeit they were once from Holland. They wouldn't interest me at all. And I have actually tried growing these strains of fish many, many years ago, and it's just you know, mind numbing. You see £2 a year, £1, £3, and it's just not satisfying at all. So we've acquired three or four different strains over the years, and we've now got, you know, quite exceptional strains of fish that will all go to £50. Obviously, you've seen with the big rig fish that we managed to get one to £70, albeit growing that on in a fish farm environment for a number of years, not in a natural fishery, which you know, yeah. Some people are interested to know that, some aren't. To me, it is immaterial. You can't have huge fish under huge pressure. You know, if you want a fish to go to its maximum potential, you've got to care for it, nurture it like you would anything. If you want to put it in a fishery and fish for it 365 days a year, and it gets caught every other week, it's got no chance of reaching its potential, you know. So that was it, really. And in the Avenue fishery, which is a private syndicate, we try and achieve the maximum potential of every individual fish. I mean, we destock 30s now, you know. This is 8 years on from when it first started. Wow. Such are the size of the fish in the lake. You know, that's sort of where we've got to. But right now, we're in the middle of a 10-week close season. So, you know, that's the lengths we go to protect the fish. So, you know, from the middle of May right till August, it's shut. There's no fishing at all. You know, I feed the fish 2 or 3 times a week, so they feed under a non-pressured environment, and this is how they get to superb weights and, you know, and stay in superb condition.
So if we're going to just do a quick overview of the properties, you've got both the syndicates and the day tickets. So probably the most famous and the ones you've had for a long time is the Acton Top and Bottom Lake. What's the sort of general stock in those?
Yeah, well, there's two lakes there, as you know. There's a 17-acre lake that we call the Top Lake, and a 9-acre lake we call the Bottom Lake. Going back 15 years, anglers coming into carp fishing now wouldn't know this, but the Bottom Lake was always the super lake. But obviously, you know, carp eventually die, and the 60 to 70 very big fish we had in there has whittled down now naturally to 18, so we've introduced new fish. We've got 5 or 6 year old stockies now that are coming out up to £30, and then we've got 3 year old stockies that are sort of £8, £9. So we've got three generations of fish in there to replace the big ones for the future. And then the Top Lake is has got about 140 fish in, but it has got over 20 different 40s. So that seems to be the most popular one of the two at the minute. But as you know, whilst they're syndicate, this is what we want to get across with our carp casts, is that the public can access nearly all our waters. For example, with Acton Bunnell, from the middle of April to the end of May. There's a 6-week open access period. Now, these lakes do get booked quickly, but we offer all our fisheries, with the exception of the Avenue, where the anglers can come along, anybody, any group of anglers can come along and book that lake, whether it be Acton Top Lake or Acton Lower Lake, for the week for themselves. And this proves very popular, and it also gets us an opportunity to meet new anglers. And if they want to join the syndicate at a later date, we already know them, so it helps with that process as well.
So Acton, it's a syndicate, and you can potentially book a week, or there's a couple of people that run trips as well, isn't there? If you don't think you've got enough mates to stump up for the whole lake, there are a few people out there organising. They've taken weeks, and there are spaces that crop up, so one of them may be the Carp Cast at some point in the future, so message us.
I'm pleased to hear it.
So we've then got a lake that I was really impressed with when I walked around. I'd hope to get some time on there very soon myself, and it's quite a new one in your library, which is the Sitch.
Yeah, the Sitch is our latest in the sort of RH Fisheries portfolio. It's a natural lake formed on a bed of sandstone rock. It's bizarre. It actually sits in the water table. It's 26 acres. It's in, as you say, spectacular scenery in the middle of a pine forest. That one is it's quite interesting, really. We stock 450 young singles and low doubles in there. I think it's 5 years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago, and the fishery's just done a 45-12 lake record. He did two different 40s last year, and he's doing different 30s almost weekly. It's quite remarkable. We've introduced more fish for the future since the initial stocking, so we're somewhere in about the region of 700 fish in the Sitch, but its potential's fascinating. It really is. I mean, we don't close it. We have open access on it, so we're not totally maxing the ability of the fish. There's a trend to fish large boilies at distance on there, so obviously that helps the fish, because they're getting a lot of 18-20 mil boilies. It is a boilie water, which again helps the fish. So with excellent carp care on there, and angling by the syndicate, it has got the potential to be something super special, that, because it's got hundreds of fish reaching a large size at the same time, not just one or two.
So once again, it's a syndicate, and you can book the lake on an open access.
Yes, you can. Well, there's also another angle there, and again, you know, this is what we want to try and get across to the listeners. The Sitch is a syndicate. Anybody can apply. There's about an 18-month waiting list to get on the Sitch, something like that. It's very realistic to get in the following season or the season after. There's the 6-week open access from the middle of April to the end of May. So, you know, we allow somebody to book half the lake, because obviously it's a huge water with 22 swims. So, you know, that says in itself, every swim's got well over an acre of water. It's 26-acre fishery. So there's the open access angle like there is on Acton. But in addition to that, there's one magnificent swim, which I believe you've seen, which we call the Boathouse Swim. It's a drive and survive with an eco toilet, but it's a great big double-boarded swim, very professionally built, that sits out in the reeds of the fishery. And it commands a huge area of water, and that swim can be booked for 3-day sessions for two anglers, or a week session for two anglers. It only accommodates two anglers at any time of the year. So anybody can ring us up on the RH Fisheries phone number, which is 01952 463 141, and they can book on the Sitch.
Yeah, it looked fantastic, that swim. I almost fished it myself this week, but there was a force whatever gale blasting in on the front of it. I didn't have any fixings to fix the bivvy down on the wooden platform, so I'll be back for that one again. But yeah, it looked fantastic. I cannot describe how beautiful that lake looks.
It's beautiful. Yeah,
it's like I say, it's just completely surrounded. It's a very interesting looking wooden building at the back of the swim as well, isn't it? You think you might get that one day?
Possibly. The estate we lease it from, the Bradford estate, they've renovated it. It's an old sort of, looks a bit like something out of Hansel and Gretel, doesn't it?
So it does,
it's bizarre to describe, but it's spectacular to look at. It's located just behind the swim. At the moment, it's just an eco toilet and the swim that we offer, but we are already in talks with the estate about taking that on as a more of a holiday let fishing with the facilities of the house, as we do at Western, which, you know, we can come on to Western in a minute. So that is something that's in the pipeline that may well come to fruition in the future.
Yeah, Western was again a stunning lake in the grounds of Western Park. Most of these are sort of not too far from the M6, are they? It didn't take me long to get back to the M6. They're sort of very accessible, I would say, these lakes. Western Park, again, it's a syndicate lake through the majority of the year with open access in the sort of 6 week period, is it? Again, same, April to May, and all year round you can book the swim that you've just mentioned, which is, do you call it the boathouse again? Or?
Yeah, we've got a gorgeous grey two listed boathouse, sandstone boathouse with a fully oak fitted kitchen. It's got a large bedroom overlooking the lake with two single beds, a shower, a little TV, and a lovely oak fitted kitchen, and the swim's either side of it, and one other under a big African cedar tree next to it, come with the reservation. So it is incredibly popular. So I would say to listeners, you know, do what you do when you go to France, book a year in advance, because next year it's already completely sold out almost. You know, we've only got maybe the odd October date or the odd March date, because we get a lot of repeat business. But that's extremely popular. So, but if somebody wants to book, you know, for 18, you know, no problem, they'll get availability. So you get the luxury of the boathouse with a swim either side, and an additional swim. So it's for two anglers and two non-fishing anglers. So it's perfect if you want to just go with your mate, or if you want to take your wife or your girlfriend. You know, it's five-star fishing compared to anything I've ever come across fishing in Europe or in England.
And one difference of Western Park to a lot of the other lakes is you've gone down the pretty fish scaly route in there, it seems.
Yeah, we have. We wanted a point of difference there from everything else, because a lot of our lakes, as you know, they're sparsely scaled, deep-bodied, thick-shouldered mirrors that grow big, and they're very strong fish. Western, yeah, they're a bit more, you know, I don't know what you describe them as, more traditionally English-looking fish. They're very dark, chestnut commons. There's a lot of very scaly mirrors in there. There's some that are literally jet black. Now, they're not jet black due to, you know, water clarity in there, or jet black due to their age. They're jet black just to the strain. You know, it's literally a strain. There's some fish in there that are literally as black as coal, and I know for a fact they're only 7 years old, so it's nothing to do with age. In clear water, the fish will darken off, and it's never really clear because we dye the water to help prevent the weed. So it's just the strain of the fish. But yeah, they're lovely chestnut looking commons, and big plated scaled mirrors, and they're gorgeous. But by the very fact of what we discussed earlier on, the biggest fish in there at the moment is about 41.5, which is a common. None of the heavily scaled mirrors have got to 40. There's, I think, 36 or 37 is the biggest. So whilst we've gone for the pretty photographic looking fish, we've lost the sort of big weight to the top because the strain doesn't manage to get there.
And a couple of lakes, well, started off as one lake, it's now two, that were probably your most accessible lakes in the earlier days, is the Monument, and there's now the Monument number two. Had a look at those. I've never fished the Monument, I can't believe it. I remember seeing Mick Brown catch a chunk from there for the cameras, fishing with Matt Hayes when you first opened. The lakes, did you dig them both yourself, those lakes?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, when we bought this complex, it was literally just a rough field with some sheep in it, and a bit of marshy ground, and we had the land prognosis done, and we found out it was boulder clay. The old monument relic on the hill was actually an old water windmill, and that was the site of a water aquifer where the sandstone met the clay. And luckily, the clay was outside of the monument relic, so we were able to dig the lakes without importing clay. There was already sufficient clay on site. So 2001, we started Monument 1, and the fish went in 2003. I think we opened it in 2003. And 5 or 6 years ago, we did Monument 2. But we don't push them massively from a marketing point of view. We've always managed to stay relatively busy. But, you know, if I was to sort of brag about our fisheries, I would say that the Monument Complex, in my opinion, would probably have more 30 pound plus fish per acre than anywhere in the UK. I mean, the Bottom Lakes 7 acres, Monument One, and we've got 84 different 30s on photograph, you know, from the last 12 months.
Wow.
And that's a lot of big fish for 8 acres of water. And we've also got some 40s in here as well.
And the facilities were fantastic. You've got a tackle shop on site, there's bait, you know, snacks and drinks, particle boilers, there's toilets. Is there a shower there? I probably
don't
need.
There's a hot power shower. In fact, when some of the guys go to Western and Open Access, and they go to the Sitch on Open Access, if they haven't got the boathouse booked at Western, and the lads at Sitch, they come here and just have a hot shower and pop back, because as you say, the Monument, Western and the Sitch are all within, you know, a 5-minute drive of one another.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was very impressed with the avenue. I can't believe that I hadn't fished it myself. You operate quite a fair system for the fish on there, considering it's a day ticket full of large fish. They get extremely well rested, don't they?
Yeah, they do. At the Monument Complex, when we very first started, I grew up on, you know, Cuttle Mill and famous Daytiki waters around the Midlands. And I don't like seeing fish damaged, whether it's, you know, severe mouth damage or any kind of damage. It stresses me a little bit, really. So we try to make sure that the fish maintain, you know, the perfect mouths, and they continue to grow and, you know, remain healthy. So even to the sacrifice of, you know, of money, what we do at the Monument is we shut 4 nights a week and 1 whole day a week, and that's never changed from the day we first started. So we do a Monday Tuesday session, the fishery's left on Tuesday night. Wednesday we're shut all day, so they carry on feeding on any bait or anything that's in the lake. Thursday, Friday we do another session, and on the Friday night they're left alone, and then the weekend session, Saturday, Sunday, they're left alone on Sunday night. So the fish have a lot of time every week to fish and to feed without angling pressure on them, you know, which will, you know, they'll feed much more confidently, they eat a lot more bait, and they're not visiting the bank as often as they would, you know, if we were open 7 days a week.
Yes, that's a fantastic idea. It seems fairly unique, but it's got to benefit the fish. And again, with the fish not feeling as pressured, it's got to help with the actual angling when you are fishing. You know, it's the fish have got to be less wary. I don't know how good a fish's body clock is, but I've seen lakes where there seems to be one quiet night a week, and the fish, they definitely know, you know, if you open the lake 6 days. And but the fact that you're doing it like every other day, the fish, do you think the fish are good enough to recognize that? Do you think they know it's Friday night is safe?
for sure, unbelievably so, you know. I mean, they know. I mean, let's say Monday Tuesday session, and let's say we finish at dusk, say let's say it's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday, you know, they're itching to get going. That last 30 minutes, you know, it's like all lakes, you know, it's rods on the floor, pack your bivvy away, and very often you'll get a last minute bite because they're about to come on the feed. You know, and obviously because this pattern's been in place now for 15 years since we opened, you know, on a Wednesday it's like they're jumping around like trout, you know. It's ridiculous because they know there's no lines in the water. Absolutely, yeah. They're, I think they're a lot cleverer than we give them credit for sometimes.
Fantastic. So it's a 36-hour session. You turn up on the allotted day, like the Monday, and you fish Monday night, and then all day Tuesday, and then that's it. The lake's rested. So it seems very fair, especially for people that don't have loads of time. It seems like about as good a day night day session you're going to get on any day ticket lake. You know, you're going to get in a reasonable swim. You've got decent fish in front of you that aren't absolutely heavily pressured. Nobody can get any sort of baiting campaign going or anything like that, you know. Even the guys that are fishing it week in, week out, you know, the local guys, it seems very fair. If I'm going to go and do, you know, that length of session somewhere, it seems like a really good option.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously a lot of guys are working. It's not cheap, but I don't think it's overly expensive. You know, £60 for the 36-hour session. And then in the winter, we drop the price from November the 1st through to the end of February to £40. And what we do in that period to entice anglers to fish through the winter, you know, because obviously the industry quietens down and we all, you know, all of us in the industry need the fishermen to keep getting out there. You know, we allowed them to use maggots in those months. And now, whilst we've got roach in the fisheries to eat the carp eggs, so we don't get overpopulated with young carp, they are very, very effective for the carp. So on the Monument Lakes, you know, often November and December can be two of the most prolific months of the year, you know.
Wow.
Another thing worth mentioning, Jamie, is that we provide all the equipment for the anglers. Obviously, we're paranoid about anything being brought to the fishery, anything nasty. We've got our own borehole on site, so we can maintain the water levels of the fisheries with our own on-site borehole. So they've got no outside water coming onto the complex. So the only thing that could ever cause us a problem was if anybody brought something horrible on nets and slings. So at the Monument, we don't allow you to use any of your own equipment. The Anuki mats are in the swims, along with a bucket to keep pouring on the fish when the fish have been weighed and photographed, and the landing nets and wastelings you collect on the car park next to the fishery office, so you don't have to bring anything with you that's wet and smelly. We provide all the equipment.
Fantastic. And then the final complex is infamous these days, I think, because of Big Rig, but what a beautiful lake the Avenue is.
Yeah, it's my pride and joy. It is absolutely spectacular. I only do a little bit of carp fishing in England now, and to me, it's different class to, you know, almost anywhere. You know, if you want big fish, and you apply to join the syndicate, it's incredibly private. It's in the grounds of my own property. It's 10.5 acres. My youngest son, I've got three sons, my youngest son's fanatical about carp fishing. He knows every single fish in there and who caught it last and all the rest of it, but they don't come out very often. It is different in that I feed the fishery, so if you were to join as a member, you have to get your head around the fact that you could be fishing and I obviously won't feed on top of you, but if I think there's not sufficient bait gone in that week, I will fish in feed in other areas of the lake. So it's quite unique from that point of view.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've got 30, I think we're up to about 35 different 40s, we've got 7 different 50s, we've got 4 over 55, including a 60-pound common, and obviously Big Rig at 70, but all the fish have grown through in there to the weights they're at now. The only fish that we've grown on outside the fishery before we put her in there is obviously Big Rig that created all the controversy, and I don't quite get that myself. But
I understand why you did. I mean, as I've had this conversation with Kevin Nash a number of times. You know, he attempted to grow the biggest fish that he possibly could in the most perfect environments as a hobby stroke experiment. You know, how big can we grow fish in the UK if we take the right size fish and give them the most perfect environment? Now, obviously, you did that with Big Rig. You created a 70-pounder, probably bigger than 70. You've done your job, and now you've introduced it into a lake so that people can fish for it. As you say, the rest of the fish are, you know, are no different to any other fish that have been stocked into a lake and grown on and fished for and fed and stuff. And you've grown enough.
Sorry, Jamie, that's absolutely right. And there are other fish in there which I think will go on to beat the British record. They are just a bit of a sore point with me. I'm not overly bothered now, really. I achieved what I wanted to achieve, as you quite rightly say. But what we, and I don't think she's not only just the biggest fish, she's pristine. I mean, the last time she got caught at the end of the season in May, she was just under 70 pound, and the anglers have to ring me so, you know, I can go out and have a look at the fish before she comes onto the bank. And there's not a blemish on her. You know, she's just absolutely sensational condition.
So let me just get my head around this again. Even taking Big Rig out of the equation, you've got 35 40s, 7 50s, and how many 60s?
We've got one 60-pound common.
Yeah.
Fish called Tarka. The first went 60 last year. But when you go into the cabin, I'm not sure whether you went into the cabin.
I did, yeah.
You did, yeah. Well, in there you can see in some of the rooms the history of the fish, and, you know, the weight they've gained is quite remarkable. You know, they've got to these weights in 5 or 6 years, you know, from upper 20s, low 30s, some of them.
So one of your guys who took me round the guided tour of all the fisheries, Alex, who if you come to fish any of the fisheries, especially the Monument, you'll probably bump into him. He said he'd been working for you 6 years and he's seen fish go from 30 to 50 pound in that 6 years. I mean, that's fairly incredible,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, possibly even 28 to 60, I would say, to be fair. Because Tarka was a fish that was about that weight, and then she went over 60 last year. So, but it's not just that, you know, we've got... you know, the backup fish in there, they're probably the averaging about 36. So, you know, if you get a bite on the avenue, you know, there's another 50, 60, 70 fish that are up to 30s, approaching 40. You know, it's quite remarkable, really.
It's incredible. And as far as the look of the lake, as you said, it's immaculate. It looks like everything's been hand planted and personally manicured. You know, the place is stunning, isn't it? It's certainly unique, and as a big fish water, I mean, I can't think of anything even close to it. On the side there, another lake that I had a look at is Little Avenue, which is the polar opposite, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the Little Avenue was once one of our stock ponds and one of our growing on pools, and, you know, a lot of... we held a lot of fish in there for a long time over the years when we were building, you know, Monument 1 and Monument 2. You know, and we don't need any more fish in our waters now because, as you know, we've got our own fish farm. We'll come on to that in a minute. So we're self-sufficient. So it was a question of, you know, it was a bit redundant, really. It was too... It's too deep and got one major snag in it, which prevents it being a very good fish farm if you wanted to access your fish every year. So we decided we'd turn it into a fishery. We've got some stock in there that have been in there many, many, many years. We're not totally sure what and how many. And we've introduced fish over recent years, another 80 large fish. They're probably averaging 18 to 24 pound. There's a stunning 40 in there that's yet to be caught, but we did only open the fishery this spring. You know, a lovely head of 20s and half a dozen nice 30s.
It looked quite interesting fishing to me as well. The lake's fairly clear. Obviously, there's dye in it to help with the weed. But you've got a viewing point in the far corner that I got up. And even in heavy wind, I saw quite a few fish. It looks fun. Alex was telling me about, you know, guys that were struggling for a bite on there and then started float fishing for them, and it looks quite intimate. You know, you can sort of lay traps and like I said, you can catch carp on the float or other methods. It looks good fun.
Yeah, well, it's exciting fishing, and it's different to any of our other lakes in that, you know, as you say, the fish are so close to you, it's just so exciting. And what we do, it's there's just three swims on it. It's 2.5 acres. It is very deep. It's 17 foot to 8 foot. So they get a lot of the bites on the marginal shelf, which again encourages the fish under the overhanging bushes and to come in close. But it is incredibly exciting. There's a couple of lookout towers, and you can get up there and feed the fish. But we allow them to use any method on there, Jamie, just as a little bit of a point of difference from the norm in RH fisheries, in that they're up in the water a lot, so zigs will work on there. It's relatively snag-free, so... We haven't got an issue with that. We treat the weed. So we allow the anglers to bring maggots and bring zigs and bring things we don't allow in our other lakes, because it's a lake booking. If you book it with two of your pals, it's your lake for the session. So we don't want to interfere too much. We just want to allow you to get on and catch the fish. But as you say, if you like creeping around and catch them under your feet, it's amazing. And they really are pretty fish in there as well.
Fantastic. And finally, we move on to the RH Fisheries breeding program, that the fish that you can buy, all these fantastic fish that you've created over the years, people can now buy them.
Yeah, we can. And you know, obviously the magic of Big Rig, which I didn't really envisage at the time, and I didn't sort of plan it, was that we managed to spawn us successfully outdoors. I'm not one for setting up a hatchery and reeling fish indoors. I think it creates problems. The fish lose a little bit of their immune system. They're a lot more susceptible when you put them into the outdoor environment. So we like to breed the fish naturally in the lakes and outdoors. So she bred in the fish farm. And probably one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my time in carp fishing was grade the fry, you know, this year. We had about 4,500 fry from her, and we graded the biggest 500. Obviously, these things are feet in your hand, palm of your hand at the moment. They're only tiny. And put them back in. And we had to put a roof on the fish farm, which you saw, to prevent cormorants getting to them. And they're an automatic feeder, and we test the water every day, and, you know, they're nurtured. So the potential of those is really phenomenal. I mean, they're from the biggest female in the country, and they've been graded. You know, they're not just the run-of-the-mill ones. So it's a bit early days. They're exactly a year old now, and they're about probably 30-40% bigger than anything we've ever had at that age before. So they're already showing signs of being very, very big. In addition to that, we've got the Super Freak strain, which is your monument fish. You know, they're fish that are bred in the monument, and we take them out and grow them on. And they've gone to 49 in a day ticket fishery, so their pedigree is incredible. Some guys we sold for fish up to sort of in your neck of the woods, up to Hull Hallway last year. Rang Angling Times, I think, to do with me, and there was a feature in there last week. They bought some £3 Super Freaks off us, and apparently in 12 months they'd already gone over £10. You know, in the north, that's just incredible. So we've got those two strains, and then we've also got the Western Park strain, so we can offer the scaly fish they describe. And you know, Wyeside Lakes up in Lancashire, they've been good customers of ours for a few years. And Sally's bought a lot of the hand-picked, really pretty, unique, scaly fish for her lake. So I'm expecting to hear great things about them up there in years to come.
Yeah, I saw some pictures over the winter where they were stocking or restocking last year. And yeah, I didn't know the fish were from you, but I think there's a lot of people out there fishing for your fish that probably don't know about it at the minute. Yeah. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we don't, you know, make a song and dance about. We're very professional about what we do. I don't think I've ever delivered a fish that's to a club that have lost a single fish. That's the caliber of the fish that we sell and the condition we deliver them in. I haven't had one customer ring me that says they've lost a single fish. You know, which is a great credit to what we do. But yeah, we've got a big order book. We've got a lot of orders in advance for big rig babies. A lot of orders. Some categories were sold out already for this winter. We've got some of the younger fish, but our sort of low doubles and our upper doubles, we've sold out of those. So yeah, you know, we've got a lot of customers, and the fish farm development's going very well.
The fish farm looks amazing. I mean, you've got like a jacuzzi almost in the lakes. I've seen people with the big air pumps and water pumps that you know, that create the aeration. You've done it with like it is like a jacuzzi, isn't it? Is it Airstones or something you have in there?
Yeah, we bought a company called Zoo Aqua who do the giant aquariums at the zoos, and literally we've got this enormous German pump, and we've had the whole site was dug out and all the piping was put in place, and each fish farm pool has got six giant diffusers, 1 meter diffusers coming up from the lake bed. So, you know, basically what that does, it obviously maintains the oxygen level even in the hot weather, you know, the still weather when there's algal blooms. It attacks all the algae and breaks the algae down, so it maintains the oxygen level. So whereas in most lakes on a summer's day they'll be basking under the surface and a bit lethargic and oh, I don't think we want to feed, you know, they're revved up in there all the time, so that helps them, you know, eat more food, helps them get to the bigger weights quicker. I mean, our C3s in there, our Super C3s get very close to 10 pound in 3 years from being born, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's five years plus, isn't it, usually for any other fish. I mean, it seems amazing what you've done there, and you know, those fish that you're breeding and selling, they're as English as the lean is that people are fishing for, you know, in various lakes over the last 30 years. You know, it was all about the leanies when I was young, and as we know, a 40 pound one is fairly rare, isn't it?
Yeah, they're born and bred in Shropshire, and more importantly than that, they're born and bred outside in a fishery environment. You know, I think that's important personally.
Yeah, that's the key thing.
Immune systems, yeah.
We've bought a number of fish for our lakes in the northwest, Dead Man's in Manchester, and we've had some good stockings over the last 15 years, and I don't think there's a single stocking where we haven't lost one. You know, we bought some Simos many years ago, and we bought the bigger ones, and the bigger fish don't seem to survive as well in that lake. You know, they're all 20s, and I think they're all gone now. To be honest, but we did buy some small ones. I mean, is that something? Is there an optimum weight for stocking fish for the longevity of them, for them to survive?
Well, timing's vital. So obviously, you've got to, you know, as all fish farmers do, deliver them in the cold weather when they're a little bit more lethargic and they don't knock themselves about, they don't get as stressed. You know, there's things you can do to de-stress them a little bit, but not really. I think that, you know, the younger fish are a little bit stronger, but they're, you know, they're a little bit livelier. Really, until they get sort of 30 pound and they're females, then you've got to be very careful. They're a little bit more fragile. But if they're handled correctly and moved correctly, and I think a lot of it is what happens before you, the customer, get the fish. You know, you've seen my facility where they go from the fish farm into an enormous tank on our own borehole water system on site, so they don't get moved, they don't get double, treble handled. You know, they're held overnight for there, and then in there, then they're delivered. You know, we don't sack fish up in transportation tanks or anything like that. You know, I don't believe in that. It takes the mucus off the fish. So, you know, we get them to the customer in pristine condition. So you'll have to buy some from us, and I'm very confident you won't lose one.
Fantastic. And if somebody does want to buy it, the rhfisheries.com is the website. There's loads of videos on there. There's galleries of the fish. There's details of everything we spoke about, of all the different fisheries. The phone number, 01952463141. Anything else you want to add before we go?
No, I think that's it. Jamie, I'm just, you know, to the listeners, I'm just grateful that I said to you, I'd love to do something with you. You know, you've got a tremendous following. You know, I love listening to the Carpcast, so does my son and a lot of his angling buddies. You know, it's becoming bigger and bigger and more popular. And, you know, that's a credit to you. But what I was anxious for you to do, and you've taken the time and trouble to do it, and I'm very grateful, is, you know, you've been to all these venues we've just talked about recently. You've seen the fish farm, you've seen the fisheries, you know, so it's nice for me to talk to you, having you visited the site. You know exactly, you know, what I'm saying is correct, you know, and you've been there and seen yourself. So that's it, really. It's it was nice having you down here, and it's good talking to you.
I'll be back soon. I need to catch some of these fish now. That will be the next stage.
But, you're very welcome.
Thanks for taking the time, Rob.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe via the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So thanks to Rob. For the next couple of weeks, I'll play out what he said about the various different lakes. The sort of, so you can hear about the individual opportunities, and if you do want to book any of the lakes, like the holiday swim on the Sitch, which you can book any time of year, then get yourself over to RH Fisheries to the website. And what he's doing with the actual fish breeding down there, I mean, it just shows the demand. I mean, there needs to be choice in everything, I think. And, you know, if you want to go and buy some proper old strain, English fish that are going to take 35 years to get to any significant size, you know, some nice scalies, then by all means, go for it. You know, if you're probably at an age where, you know, maybe our age, Mark, where you might start to be able to look at affording to buy a lake or whatever, because, you know, there ain't many 20-year-olds got the money to go buy a lake and then wait 30 years, you know, for the fish to sort of hit their peak, then at least there is an option out there now. You know, he seems to have some of the it's not by accident, he's picked some of the best growing fish strains there are, and he's growing them in the best possible way. And the fact that they're all bred outdoors, you know, there's no artificialness about, I mean, yes, they're fed, but all fish breeders feed their fish, but, you know, it's all done outside in proper ponds that he's dug. So his mortality rate is incredible. Like, it's tiny compared to pretty much everybody we've ever bought fish off over the years. It's absolutely tiny. So rhfisheries.com, if you want to go and have a look at the pictures, the videos, or anything on there, and just shows how much he's fishing in demand. And quite a lot of you out there are already fishing for his fish, whether you know it or not, but he assures me that you are. But yeah, there we go. Anyway, yeah, Rob will be back next week and he'll tell us about another one of his lakes in his own words. But I can say they're all pretty stunning. They're all pretty stunning, and lots of them have got some very large fish. Listeners' questions, Mark. Shall we? We've got a few.
Ask us a question.
In the background, have you seen any that take your fancy, or shall I crack on?
Let's just crack on. Dive in. Reel them off.
Okay, here's an interesting one. This is asked by one of our extra members. We released an extra last week, by the way. If you are an extra member and haven't logged in for a little while, we did release one, so go and check it out on the website. If you're not a member, there's hundreds of hours of content on there. There's about 20 or 30 hours of stuff that you can't hear anywhere else that's there for extra members only, and also there's a couple hundred hours of all our back episodes, right back to episode 1, 75 episodes ago. Mark, seems like a long time. We had Kevin Nash for our very first guest, but there are some cracking guests on there. Everybody from your Daryl Pecks, Ali Hamidis, and Simon Scotts, and there's a load of good stuff in the archives. Get yourself over to our website, carpcast.com, or carpcast.com it is. Get yourself over there. But yeah, if you are an extra member, there is a section on the forum in our extra section on the website where you can ask questions and we will answer them. And we've been a bit behind on these questions, so there's a couple in here that we can go to. And this one's from Ian Walker. Love the podcast except for Jamie eating on them. Yeah, I think that's only happened twice, but I must have been hungry. We've done loads on indications, slack lines, tie lines, bobbies, etc., and it fascinates his engineering mind. One topic we haven't covered is helicopter rigs. Well spotted, you're right, we haven't really said much about them. Last year I started using helicopters when a chod was the only way to fish a particular swim, but what has always puzzled me is what mechanics of the setup causes the hooking of the carp. All videos and articles I've seen talk about using a light lead, or lead as light as possible, just enough to get to the spot, so the lead isn't having the same hooking role as a semi-fixed lead or leg clip or inline lead. Setup worked well for him last year. Really like the bite indications. Any movement with a rig is moving the line and giving some sort of indication on the bobbin and the buzzer. So rather than just chog rig use, I'm wanting to explore using helicopter rigs for more typical rigs, but can't get my head around the hooking potential. But you see so many respected anglers using them. I know you two tend to use lead clip setups, but what do you think? That's a great question, Ian, actually. Something we could probably do a whole show talking about, to be fair. I noticed when I fished Yateley and down south, lots of people use a helicopter rig, including like Terry Hearn, as their normal setup. So I'm not even talking about chod rigs, but, you know, let's say you're using a blowback rig or, a normal sort of knotless knotted coated hook link, coated braid type thing, they will use it on a helicopter setup instead of a lead clip. Have you come across that much, Mark?
Yeah, I think most places I've been is it's just been like lead clips or inlines for a lot of people. I mean, when you talk about your helicopter setup, it does definitely seem that to Yateley and, you know, Terry Hearn's crew sort of popularised it.
It's a southern thing, I think, but like, as I said, that they use them. I think the anti-tangle properties of a helicopter rig is why a lot of people use it. I mean, you know, hook length materials have got better these days, but you remember the sort of braid days where you either used line or, you know, nylon, or you used braid, and braid was better. It seemed to be an advancement. It snapped a lot less. It was tougher. But it tangled compared to line. So a lot of old school carpers probably used helicopter rigs because of that. Obviously, lots of people started using helicopter rigs when the chod came on the scene. Now, there's a number of questions within this. I have actually thought about using a helicopter rig a lot more because it definitely seems to be better in weedier waters, and I think we mentioned it, it might have been one of the chats with Roger Bacon a little while back. I know I spoke a lot about it with Roger, but there's a chap on the water local to us that's been hammering the lake, and it looks like he's not doing any different to anybody else when he reels in or lands a fish or whatever, but it is what he's doing. He's fishing quite a weedy swim, and he's using like a normal rig. It's a hinge stiff rig really, but with a braid boom or a coated braid boom. So if you imagine like the hinged hook section, like pop up, and then just a normal sort of length boom, you know, like a 6-inch boom sort of thing. But he's using it on a helicopter setup where the rig can slide back quite a bit. He's using it with a normal size lead, like a pretty normal setup. And then he's hammering like this lake. He's catching way more than anybody else is catching, just using that method. And I suddenly thought, anywhere with a slightly choddy bottom or weed, I don't like the chod rig. I use it where I have to, but the hooking potential of a chod rig, it is that there are disadvantages to it, I think. You know, hook pulls are quite common with chod rigs. I know Jim Shelley has got it perfected, hasn't he? And I've seen him fish it many times, so I know how he fishes it. Which I'll go into in a second. Sounds a little bit like Ian's fishing it in this question, because he has, I know Shelley has the rods high up in the air and he has the line slack coming down off the rod tips. And I've watched him get bites, you know, on Woolpack in the morning a few years back when we were both on there, Mark. I watched him have bites and you can see the line tighten up, and I agree with what Ian says, you know, it is quite effective. But I think I know lots of other people doing the same thing, get a lot of hook pulls. I think what it is when with the light lead, when you're casting it into weed, I think the fact that the lead is light is just to stop it, you know, if you're using a 4-ounce lead, it's going to pull the end down a hell of a lot further into the weed, and then affect the sort of overall presentation. You want a light lead because you want it going in the weed a little bit, and then most of the, if you're using lead core, however you're doing it, a lot of people are using naked chods, you know, that you want that laying naturally on top of the weed. But I think there is some resistance from the lead, because even though it's a light lead, it's plugged, isn't it? So I think it artificially is getting more resistance there. But I think the way Shelley uses it, he would probably be able to explain better. And it's, I know he's fine tuned it a lot, and I've watched him have bites on it, and he doesn't lose many, that's for sure. If I have not seen him lose any, I've probably seen him have half a dozen bites on Woolpack while I've been there, while I was there. I think a lot of it relies on the weight of the line. He has the rod tip super high up in the air, and then the line dropping off in an arc, so I'm sure the weight of that line hanging off is creating some sort of resistance. He uses quite a long chod itself, and it's in like almost like in a complete semicircle the way he bends it, so that's giving like a bit more play to where the fish picks it up. But I think you're on the right track, Ian. If the setup was working well for you and you're going to start using a helicopter setup with a normal rig, I would be way more confident. I'd be way more confident fishing like that. Like, as I said, this chap I know that was fishing, you know, casting into weed with what looked like a normal rig, but on a helicopter. But most of the, you know, the Yateley guys and stuff that I've seen using a standard helicopter rig for general fishing, I mean, they don't have the rig completely free running up and down the lead core or the, you know, leadless core or leader or whatever you're using. They don't have it completely free running. They have a stop. It free runs like maybe 2 or 3 inches, and I guess if you know you're fishing in chod or weed or whatever, you can set that maybe a few inches back. But generally, you're from casting in, your rig's going to be at near the back bead, isn't it, from just from the resistance of when you cast and feel the lead down, it's going to be at the back, so there is resistance. I think as long as your bead's set properly. You ever used helicopters?
I'm sure I have at some stage, but I can't honestly remember when or why or how.
No, certainly if you're fishing like silty meres and stuff, which we've got a lot of up here, and, you know, a lot of Rob Hales' waters are all silty meres as well. then I can see it being a major advantage, you know, using and sometimes obviously you need to cast a little bit further and you want a heavy lead on it, and if you know it's going to plug into 6 inches, 12 inches of silt or whatever, you kind of have to use a you have to use a helicopter setup. But yeah, I would not be worrying about the size of my lead. I'd be using a normal size lead. I'd be pinning, you know, working out the sort of depth of whatever you're fishing into, if you're fishing into soft or whatever. And if you're fishing on a hard bottom, just have the you know, your stopper bead within 2 inches of the lead, I think. It shouldn't be any problem, but I've seen a lot of people fishing Yateley in the Southern Lakes with that type of setup and then just using a normal rig and all seems fine. They get normal screamers, takes. One thing I've noticed using chod rigs, you get a lot of dropbacks, and I think that's because the resistance is the other way, so the fish swim towards you because the resistance is, you know, the fish always swim away from the resistance, basically, don't they? So now, yeah, if you've got a conventional setup with, you've got your rod tip, you've got the line going out to a lead clip, and then you've got the rig, the most resistance is in the direction of your rod, because not only have you got the weight of the lead, you've then got the resistance of the line coming off the rod. Whereas with the chod rig, there's more resistance. There's because it's free running, there's no resistance coming towards your rod, as opposed to going the other way where it will move the lead. So I think that's why you get a lot more dropbacks on the chod rig. I think it's the opposite way to like a standard rig. You got anything to add?
Not really, to be honest. My experience with the helicopter rig and chod rig is quite limited. So basically, is the truthful but pointless answer.
Yeah. Savage Masons, I don't know who that is, but his name on our forum is Savage Masons. He asked a question about Elstow Pit 2 because he's got a ticket there. But the question is more about fishing deep waters. That's something we both had experience of, isn't it, Mark? But he's basically saying he's never tackled a water that deep. He's had a plumb around, and other than the margins, struggled to find any other depth changing features around the swim. Can we steer him in the right direction, or how would you go about fishing it? Do you stick to the margins or create a feature using bait or whatever? One thing I would say about deep water is, like, everything's relative. So if you're fishing a lake that's 7 foot deep and you find a hump or a bump that comes up like 2 foot, it's a pretty significant feature, because it might be, instead of 7 foot deep, it's 5 foot on the top of it. You know, that's a pretty significant feature. Now, if that same feature is in 30 foot of water, it's still a significant feature. Even if it's 28 foot on top of it and then 30 foot around it, it's still a 2 foot hump. And that's the thing that took me a bit to get my head around, is those features are still there. It's just harder to actually feature find in 30 foot. But if you pull the lead nice and slowly when you're leading around, and you're still looking for those same things. And I know for a fact there are features in the decoy, which is the swim that he mentions. Same out in front of the headland, isn't it? You're just casting into like really deep water out there. But there are things. But it seems weird because it's 26 foot and like you'd like it to be 15 foot. You're like, if I could find something that was 15 foot when it's 35 foot all around, that'd be great. But there isn't anywhere like that, or not really. But if you've got 35 foot deep and you find something that comes up to 27, that's a pretty significant feature. And as we know, fish use features to maneuver around the lake. So I would fine tune your feature finding a little bit more, because I know they are out there. But you did touch on the right thing, and that's the marginal shelf. Now, the marginal shelf on Elstow, when we were on there, it's probably deeper now, but the marginal shelf was around 20-22 foot mark, where the sort of weed stopped.
Yeah, the onion weed started, I'd say, between 20 and 23-24 foot.
Yeah, and that is the best feature on the lake. Most of my bites were from different swims were fishing that feature. So you cast out to, obviously, the deeper the water, the less the weed grows. So quite often it's super clear in the deep. Keep pulling back until you hit where the weed starts and start baiting there. And what we used to find on Elstow specifically is that once you started putting bait in an area regularly, where the weed started getting shallower and shallower as the fish clean the weed off, feeding on your bait. You find that as well?
Oh, 100% did that several times in several different spots, and when the fish were on it, that's exactly what happened. It sounds weird when you said the fish were ripping the bottom up and making it shallower, but that's exactly what it is. They come up the shelf and filling that onion weed or the bottoms of the onion weed with hemp, and was using I used a lot of Vital in ground bait for a while as well, and that worked. It was your balls just kind of went straight into it.
Yeah, so I'd certainly be doing that. I'd be having a look for an open water feature, find something that comes up 3 foot, 4 foot, because that's still a significant feature. If that same feature was in a lake that was 7 foot deep, it's coming up nearly half the depth, and you'd be got like, wow, that's a really impressive feature. Well, it's still the same feature in 30 foot as far as the carp's concerned. They know it's there. Don't be frightened. I found a lot of areas like that in that lake that were 27 foot, 26 foot, and 32, 35 around it, and assuming you see fish near there and your location, they're certainly spots to bait, I think, because the fish will use them when they're in that area. So yeah, but certainly find that shelf, find the point where the weed starts, and then fish on the edge of it. Forget how deep it is, it doesn't make any difference. It's only an issue to you because it's 32 foot. It's not an issue to the fish. Like, it's just where the weed starts, which is where the food is, where the stuff is. Like, the depth is irrelevant. It's all relative. I mean, if you think pit two is deep, what's it like compared to Bundy's, Mark?
Bundy's is about a third deeper again. But the interesting thing with Bundy's, the summer spots were in the margins in 24.
Yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah, it's all relative. And, the fish feed in 60 foot, don't they, in there? So.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Savage Masons, I hope that helped. And do keep us informed of how you get on there. I think there's a lot more fishing there now, isn't there, Martin, than there was when we were on there.
The old ones we were fishing for still around in there nowadays?
I have absolutely no idea. Your mother's not been out for years, has it?
No, I think that one's gone. No, I know, I just think some of the smaller ones. Like, when I had one that later became known as Twisted Scale, I had it back as a low 20.
Yeah.
It came out, I think, up to about upper 30s, years after. I think little shoulders made about the same sort of weights. I had that one at 28.
Yeah.
And then there were several stockies. I know I had one. I've got pictures of me with it at 13 pounds. It later became known as Chernobyl. But not sure how big that went, or if it's still there.
No idea. Fill us in, Mr. Savage Masons, let us know. There's another one. There's a chap asking an interesting question. About, do you think anglers should build up to hard venues? Should they jump in and learn the hard way or practice on easier syndicates first? Terry Hearn and Nigel Sharp fished hard lakes when they were very young, and they're fantastic anglers, but I think the majority of people build up to more difficult lakes. Do you think it makes a difference to angling ability? Show's excellent, fellas. Keep it up.
I don't think Terry Hearn jumped straight onto Yateley. You read his book, he started off on some of the London parks first.
I mean, more general, fishing's personal, isn't it? Like,
it is.
We all go fishing for different things. Like, I get bored very quickly on runs waters. On the show we did when I got back from France, and I seemed to be in a flyer peg with loads of fish, and once I'd had 10 fish, I was like reeling the rods in at night. I was like, for me, I need that challenge, and catching fish every 5 minutes is not a challenge. Like, but that's me personally. I know some people that if they're not getting regular action, they lose interest, whereas for me it works the other way around. Like, I want to, I'd rather fish a low stock lake and work really hard for each bite. Fishing's different for everybody. I do know that when I was younger, I wanted to kind of go through the ranks, like earn my credentials. Like I didn't want to catch a 20 before I caught a double. I didn't want to catch a 30 before I caught lots of 20s. I got offered a ticket before I'd caught my first 30. I got offered a ticket on Harefield, which had 240s in at the time, and a load of 30s, and I turned the ticket down because I didn't think I was ready. I wanted to catch, I joined Rodney Meadow, which had 230s in it, and I wanted to catch one of those 30s before I even considered somewhere that had 40s in. Nowadays, there are lots of big fish in lots of different places. We mentioned Rob Hales Waters before. You can get a ticket for the Avenue, which is got a ridiculous stock of fish. I think there's the 70, but even if you take out Big Rig and the fish that he's grown in there, there's basically maybe 15 50s, load of 40s and a couple of 60s. Like, you know, you could pay, join that lake as your first ever syndicate and catch 50s and 60s. It's possible. I'm not saying the lake's easy, it's not. It's actually pretty tricky, I think, but not the point. The point is that could be your first syndicate. And if you've got the money and that's what you want to do, then why shouldn't you? It's personal. You know, we've been over this this elitism that goes in fishing, where some people, you know, somebody that's maybe worked all their life to maybe catch a couple of the Yateley biggins because there weren't many lakes that had 50-pounders in 10 years ago. Well, now there's lots. And some of them are commercial waters that, you know, if you pay the money or wait your turn on the waiting list, you know, you've got access to them. Is that right or wrong? It's not for me to say. If you enjoy it, why am I to tell you what you enjoy for your hobby? That's for you. So would you be a better angler if you worked your way through the ranks? And yeah, probably. Like if you did join somewhere like the Avenue for your first syndicate, you know, a lake that's where the conditions have been made perfect specifically to grow fish in there, so they grow very large. If you went there and, you know, caught a 60 and 550s in your first season and 20-40s, are you ever going to put the effort in on an Elstow Pit 2? I don't know. So would it make you a better angler to you know, do your apprenticeship? Certainly, I think it would. But
I think that goes without saying, to be honest. I think it also makes you appreciate fish more.
That's a point. You know, that's a point that I didn't make, but yeah, definitely. Let's do one more because we've been a little while now.
Go on then. What we got?
Watercolour. I think it's A. Kitson, this one. Yeah, Adam Kitson. Hi guys, interested in your thoughts on how watercolour affects fishing positively and negatively. Specifically, a syndicate of two lakes are both stream fed. One's totally gin clear, shallow and weedy, and the other one is often coloured at this time of year by tannins from leaves falling in. I presume he sent this in the autumn time. But it's not a muddy, clouded colour. The heavy rain we've had has flooded out the streams and both lakes have turned to chocolate soup, literally overnight. It happens a few times through the year following heavy rain. The Gin Clear Lake clears up again quickly, but the other lake takes much longer. Would this change in colour put you off fishing? Would you do anything differently, bait differently, or expect any different behaviour from the fish? He's saying that he's fishing the gin lake. He would presume are usually used to sight feeding, so maybe put off by the colour. Whereas the fish that are used to the colour probably be less effective.
I don't think colour has got a massive amount to do with it. I think oxygen content would. Yeah. I say that because I know of a couple of lakes that spring to mind. One is a small club lake, Ravenfield, and I've seen that where there's been an influx of rain. The lake's gone from relatively clear to, chocolate coloured. And every swim's done fish. It's fished its head off just with that influx of fresh water. I can put that down to maybe a slight raise in temperature, maybe. But, you know, I think oxygen content is the key there. And also, the other lake, you know, it's quite, a large pit. It's a dammed river. It's about 70 acres. And not actually encountered this myself when I've been there, mainly because I don't go there much, but I've heard stories in the past where there's been a lot of rain yeah, there's been a big influx of water and they've all gone to the top end where the water has come in, and there's been some great catches made. So, and get on the inflow.
I know when you used to fish rivers as a kid, like coloured water. Now, obviously, rivers, you're a lot closer to the fish, aren't you, than our carp, you know, carp anglers are a lot of the time. But rivers definitely used to fish better when they were coloured from, you know, when they've been flooded or floods gone through. There was always a peak time as well, wasn't it, when it was like all dying back down back to normal, but it's still fairly coloured. And I just think the fish are less wary when it's coloured. I've always felt that. Quite often if you see you know, carp feeding in the corner of a lake or whatever, and it's all coloured up, the fish almost look excited in it, and other fish can come in from outside of the coloured area, and then it's like they're triggered by it. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the case with coloured water. I certainly wouldn't worry about colours of my bait. I wouldn't be changing that. I don't know how great carp's eyesight is anyway. I think, you know, hearing vibrations and smell are the sort of main positive and negative reactions to other anglers and bait and food and stuff. I always feel a bit happier when it's coloured myself. I mean, you know, we've heard stories of people spotting dirt and stuff to specifically colour the water. You know, I've seen many people do that over the years with great success. You know, we know people, I've read it a few times, of people spotting, and I don't know if that's the noise trigger because they think there's food coming in the spot, or whether it's just colouring the surface. But being coloured does not bother me at all. I know some lakes that fish rubbish when the local stream floods into it, but that can be from different reasons, because it's brought other stuff in, or quite often it happens in the autumn, winter time. It's bringing a load of cold water into the lake and it can knacker the fishing up a bit. But I don't think it's the colour myself. I think coloured water helps us usually.
Yeah, I would, although I've got to be honest, I do like clear water just for watching them.
Yeah, clear water's great, obviously. I think you just need to find your rigs a little bit in clearer water, but I'm still not convinced. You know, I've watched a lot of underwater footage from carp now over the last sort of 10 years since the first quarter underwater vids came out, and I mean, they almost swim into it at times, don't they? Or they miss bait sometimes as they're swimming about. It's normally the feel and touch that scares them or spooks them, doesn't it? When they actually pick something up and it touches them. Like, I have seen them in the edge spook from visual sights, like big blatant pop-ups stuck up in the middle of the swim. I have seen that. But if you get a feeding area going, the water's coloured up anyway, I think you're way more likely to get a bite. So, I think about it, the more I prefer coloured water.
Yeah, I think if we can have it coloured, but only on our spot, and clear for the rest of it.
Yeah. Okie doke. I think we'll leave that there for now. Should we? The same lad does ask, how do you find the key in cold water? I've caught really well on the key in cold water. Now, there are places I've used the key where it hasn't been that successful in warm water or cold water. It does seem to be quite lake specific, the key. But I had 250s out of Nash's Cops Lake last winter on the key, on key cultured hook baits with scattering a key around. I know Julian fishes the key right through the winter, and I know Crowy had fish on the key from that lake where the big and died up at Lincolnshire Way. What's that called?
I'm not sure, but I know he's had, I think it was Emmeland who was fishing up Yorkshire, East Yorkshire, where he's done a few winters. I know he had a lot of fish from there on it when it first came out, or maybe even before it came out.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be worried about using the key in winter. The only thing I will say with the key is I've never used too much of it. I've never liked putting a load of it in. It does seem quite a powerful bait, and I like the cultured hook baits, and then like a scattering of chops or mashed up bait around it. I'm taking Key Cray with me abroad, and I'm taking some Old Faithful Scopex squid, because that's what we caught loads of our fish on in France the other month, so I'm quite looking forward to that. Yeah, we'll try and get another show out next week before
Before you abandon us.
Before I leave, yeah, but I am going to be doing some content. We'll try and get some shows while I'm away, Mark. We'll try and do some mobile ones. I'll have a lot more time while I'm actually away fishing, because usually in the evenings I'll just be sat on the bank, so we can either record at my end or your end. If I've got a good phone signal, we should be able to record as normal, Mark. We might actually have more time while I'm away, but I'm going to try and do a daily vlog while I'm fishing. I say I'll have a chat with Reese and I'll let you know where that's going to be released. And Mark pulls his finger out. Feel free to do any shows as you feel free, or have something to say.
Yeah. If I go fishing and actually have something to say other than it's crap on going home, I'll see what I can do.
Just a quick one before we go. Check out vipcarpholidays.com. There are loads of weeks left in 2018 during summer holidays, and I know it as the two main venues that we have, St. Armand and the River Lot, they fill up really quickly on the school holiday weeks, because they're both really well suited to families, and they're the weeks that go first. So we're starting to focus on 2018 now. We've had a couple of inquiries this week, which is why I've just written it down on my pad here to remind you. But get yourself over to vipcarpholidays.com, have a look at the venues. One's got a swimming pool, they've both got games rooms, pool tables, table tennis, they've both got amazing fishing. And the kids' holiday weeks, both venues take two families as well, so it's perfect to take Mrs. Kids and everything, and the holiday weeks go first. So vipcarpholidays.com, get yourself over there. Until then, Mark, I'll catch up with you next week, and hopefully you'll have caught something.
Yeah, maybe not.
All right, catch you later.
See ya.
www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.